I think the thing that's been really helpful for me is understanding the reason behind why I do what I do. And the first time that really clicked was the first time I saw little kids dress up like me at shows.
Mm.
And seeing people like dress up like referees for Halloween. Like, it's a really cool thing.
You already know when something about to make a big impact. It's what we used to.
Wrestle. Yeah. Welcome to the table. Keep it locked in. Got some talent out this world about to drop in. And the story that we sharing about to shock them. And the level that I'm giving is a top 10. When you hear it's not a show where you get boxed in. Free to be authentic. Ain't nothing off limits. Paint the true picture, not somebody else's false image. Even when you low, it's what somebody else calls winning. TZ got the table set. Whether it's someone you know that's famous or ain't made it yet. Recognize the power, check the numbers on the data set. Trying to find somebody else that's better, well let's make a bet. That's a flow, just broke it down, I ain't even break a sweat. Welcome to the table. We just get it started, never done, never settled.
What is going on, universe, my people, what it is, what it was, what it wasn't, what it's going to be. This is your man, TZ Jones, Montezy, Antoine Montezy Lewis, Antoine Montezy Moore. I have many aliases, but I'm simply known as Montezy. I thank you guys for watching this wonderful episode of TZ's Table. I am your lovable host here, the hostess with the mostest once again. First thing I want to do is thank you guys for tuning in. You know, this has been a long journey. Shout out to my brother Swerve. We do the Swerve City Podcast, youtube.com/Swerve City Podcast. I am not going anywhere. I'm still my brother. We are still taking over the world. But this right here is TZ's Table, where you guys can get all the exclusive podcast information on mental health, social things, things of that nature with my guests that I have each and every month when I come here on this wonderful platform. Shout out to my brother Phil Bird for the platform here to come here in this wonderful podcast studio to shoot. I always have a good time here, and thank you to the bro for the opportunity to get this podcast space to have a good time. I'd be remiss if I didn't shout out the two sponsors of this podcast. Yes, we have sponsors now. From episode one, you know, it was a brother just trying to make it happen. Now we have sponsors. First, I want to give a shout out to Downtime in the Ring. Thank you guys to my brothers, you guys in New Mexico, for all the support, all the love. Thank you guys for everything you've done. You guys have been the first official sponsor of TZ's Table. Link in the description to check out their YouTube channel. I've been helping them with content, guests, things of that nature. They're a great up-and-coming podcast, and that's my way of showing love to them for them sponsoring this wonderful show. So Downtime in the Ring, you can click the link in the description for the YouTube channel to check them out. Also, the second sponsor is the No Gimmicks Podcast. Thank you to my man Kelvin for the love, music producer, extraordinaire, A&R, also does a wrestling podcast. Thank you, my brother, for the sponsorship as well, the second official sponsor of TZ's Table, the No Gimmicks Podcast. Once again, I do the same thing, helping them out with guest content, curating ideas, and being able to help other podcasts grow, because that's what you're here for, is to give back as well once you get in position. I want to also tell you guys, too, to go to the link in the description to check them out as well. You guys can check out both podcasts, subscribe to them, show love, and thank you guys once again for all that you do. Briefly, go to TZ Jones at Instagram, everything TZ Jones, social media to follow me. You guys can hit me up, MontezyTV@gmail.com. Hit up the Spotify, Montezy, YouTube, things of that nature. Subscribe, show love. But once again, we are here. Enough about me. We are here, and I am here with a friend of mine who I love dearly. She was actually a guest last season, but, you know, once again, I will go on my Zoom interview rant to say I do not like Zoom interviews. But they're good. I can hold it down and give you great content, but it's nothing like having that face-to-face interaction, especially with people that you love, you care about. And it just makes better content, as I always say, you know. And before I get into that, I would be remiss to say, too, go to YouTube.com, @TZ's Table ENT. It has switched. It was TZ's Table, but now it's ENT. We are at 2,000 subscribers. We are growing fast. So @TZ's Table ENT to subscribe. But my guest here today is no one other than one of my best friends in the game. I love her to death. Miss Aubrey Edwards, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. What an introduction, man. And I can't agree with you more on the Zoom aspect, because like I do podcasts and Zoom is always convenient from a like locale perspective because right. people are all over. And the podcast I did with you is overall one of my favorite interviews I've ever done. Just I love your style. I love the focus. I love that we didn't talk about wrestling at all. So I was really, really happy when we set this up. Because I 100% agree with you. Like, there's just something special about in-person interviews. Like, the energy is just vastly different. So I'm excited to be here today.
Thank you. You know, thank you for taking your time once again to give, you know, for your energy, for your love that you've given me. You've also been a great inspiration to me, kind of like a mentor with me in this, in this line of work. Because, you know, I'm not a wrestler, and I'm a musician that makes music for wrestlers, but learning the business aspect of this is a whole different thing. How to maneuver, I learned a lot from you, Swerve, different ways that we communicate, things you help me with, that when we speak directly, it's a lot of things, nuances of understanding how this works. And you've always been, you know, not only kind to me for when I first met you in Seattle at Defy years ago, but just our friendship that we've been able to maintain over these years, because you know how this industry is. Friends come and go. People want you for this, want you for that, but people who have great friendships in this is eternally rare, and I thank you, my friend.
Thank you, and I think it's important too, like, friendship as an adult is always kind of interesting because we all have our own different things we're doing, different projects, different lives, people have kids, people have spouses, whatever it may be. The thing I really love about our friendship is we'll go months without talking, and then we immediately pick it up again like we were just talking yesterday. And it's great. And I think it works for us because we both have our own things that even though we are essentially part of the same business in a way, it's great because I know that I can value you as a friend and you're never going to make me feel bad about the setup of our friendship. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And that's very important. And, you know, before I dive more into that, I have to ask you the number one question. I ask everybody that is a guest on this wonderful platform, even I ask Phil back there when we talk every day, because me and Phil talk often. But I have to ask you this question.
Okay.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I actually got 7 hours of sleep last night.
Sleep is so internal and important.
Dude.
Especially in our line of work.
I was telling you before we started recording, like, there was a party last night. One of my coworkers had a birthday party, and I'm normally very much a focused, boring, workaholic person when I'm not on TV.
Right.
And as soon as I get off the bus from work and I go back to my hotel room, I immediately make my meal prep, call my husband, and then just check on a bunch of different things that maybe I just ignored throughout the day or things that need to be done before I wake up the next day for a flight. But I had a coworker who had a birthday and she invited me. And it's weird because I've never seen myself as one of the cool kids. So I'm like, I got invited to a party with all the cool kids. I have to go. Like, I'm going to have FOMO otherwise. So I went. I was out way too late. I'm normally, like, an in-bed by 10 p.m. person, and I was calling a Lyft at, like, 3:30 in the morning. Like, it was bad.
Well, you know.
But I did the responsible thing. When I got back to my hotel room, I literally told, like, Siri, like, set my alarm for 7 hours from now. Didn't look at the time and just put the phone down and went to sleep. So I got the full sleep, didn't steal myself from like, oh, well, I'll just wake up and suffer through it because I have so much work I need to do. It's like, no, prioritize the things in your life that are important. I know that if I didn't get enough sleep last night, I was going to feel like crap today. And I would not be able to perform well on this interview. I would not be able to get anything done. So it's like, why live life at 50% when you can just take the hit one day to get back to 100%?
You know, that is a great analogy, and that brings me to this point. And thank you for bringing that up, because we're always on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was actually been reading about the curse of being in the entertainment business, because a lot of us don't get adequate sleep. And the reason why everybody's like, why these entertainers don't live very long, because you got to think about it. Really break this down. If you're an artist or in the wrestling business or any sport or anything like that, You have to think, well, athletes, they prioritize their rest in certain ways if they do it the right way. Mm-hmm. But, you know, artists are always on tour and they're living off a plane. And not only are they living off a plane, they're living out of hotel rooms and they're literally performing on stage, if they're popular, 2 hours, hour to 2 hours a night, full exertion of energy and always on the road. You guys, always on the road, weekly.
Every week.
Every week, 2-3 days shots, shows. Not to mention if you do extra stuff, depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why they say, like, well, why these entertainers, you know, they're passing or stuff like that happens is because
it's exhausting.
It's exhausting and it's not actually normal for us to do that, you know? So tell me, how do you prioritize your rest and able to have downtime in this industry? How are you able to, you know, be able to go, okay, separate from what I do, how do you prioritize your rest? What do you do to kind of decompress from everything that you do?
So it's a couple things. I think the main benefit that I gained from this is I didn't actually step into the ring before I was 30 years old. I had an entirely different career that was a strictly 9-to-5 Monday through Friday. So I had lived my life. I had been an adult. I had a whole thing. So taking all of those experiences and immediately bringing that to wrestling, I think changed how I entered wrestling. That even though I'm going 100 miles an hour and I'm doing as many indies as I can on the weekend, I still know I have to be able to be productive at 9 a.m. on Monday, regardless of whether I was in Oregon, Canada, Washington, did not matter. My boss did not care where I was on Sunday or how many people were at the show. Like, I still had deadlines I had to hit. So coming into wrestling with that mentality and having practiced that mindset for a long time, I think really helped me. I think also keeping in mind that I live very far away from where the majority of our shows are. I live in Seattle. I love Seattle. I've lived there 17 years. Most of our shows are central or eastern time zones. So I spend most of my Tuesday on a plane. I always tell people my commute is by plane. It's like a bus with one stop. You can take a nap. You can answer email. It doesn't matter. You're not going to sleep through your stop. It's great. So I'm taking the first flight out, which is typically 6 a.m., flying to wherever I need to go. I have a layover because after 4 hours, I want to stretch my legs. Like, I can't do direct flights. It's just not enough. But I try to keep West Coast hours when I'm on the road. So I'm normally like up at 6, start to go to bed by 10. I'll go to bed at like 1 a.m. when I'm on the road and then wake up around 9. That way then when I get back home, I can maximize my time awake. I don't have the day of jet lag trying to adjust because I'm on the road 200 days a year. I need to maximize the time I have at home and have it be as effective as possible. If I'm 100% in the ring, I need to be 100% at home as well. Mm. I frequently joke that in wrestling, you're either getting divorced or trying not to get divorced because we have partners at home that are supporting us, but I think we're giving our all in the ring that a lot of times we forget about the people that are supporting us. And I'm trying to not forget about my dude at home. And he's really great too. Like, he's a huge part of that in reminding me, like, if I'm laying in bed and I'm just like, whatever on my phone, he's like, hey, go to bed, go to bed. I'm like, oh, right. Yeah, I have a meeting in the morning, whatever. So it's knowing what you can do to kind of build those good habits, but also listening to your support system and knowing that they're looking out for your best interests in the same way that you are. They just have a different perspective of it.
You know, that makes a great point. And I had to learn this. And, you know, in our line of work and what we do in the entertainment business, or even if you're any kind of thing, a business owner, if you're a workaholic, you could work a 9-to-5. I'm not even going to just categorize this to just, you know, what we do. I learned a long time ago, and this is something that I always remember when it comes to my kids, which is why I shut down everything when it comes to my kids. When I have my kids, I shut everything down because I want to give them their time. I get them every other weekend. So for the limited time I have, I shut it down and I'm just with them. And Montezy doesn't exist. It's all Antoine. I'm dad.
Nice.
I'm daddy. You know what I mean? Montezy does this. I always say, I don't know who that person is. And crack jokes with my kids when they're there. I'm like, I don't know who that is. I recognized this when I got older. And I don't know what motivational speaker said this. I'm sorry I couldn't quote you, brother. But I did hear this and I always remembered this. Oh, I think it was Inky Johnson. Shout out to Inky Johnson. That you don't want to be so motivated and so goal-orientated in life that you, when you're reaching for the stars, that you burn everybody under. You could be you could have blind ambition, as they say, where you're so goal oriented and you're just, no matter what, you're just like this, that everything under you is falling apart. I went through a period in my life where I was like this, but my relationships with women were terrible. Mm-hmm. The relationships with my kids' mothers were not good. Now, it got me here to sit in this chair with you,
right,
but I burned a lot of people. I could not maintain a relationship because I didn't know how, and I didn't have the handbook and was around a lot of people who were married or in relationships. I just kind of burned because I didn't know. But the reason why I bring this point up is to say that, how do you manage not being so goal-orientated? Now, this is separate from your husband.
Right.
How do you manage being so goal-orientated? Hey, I'm focused on my work. I have emails. I have these things I want to do, because that's just kind of way we're wired, to make sure that everything from your family, everything like from your husband to your husband to everything balances out. What do you do to try to balance it out?
So it's funny you'd mention like having quotes and stuff, and I can't attribute this. I don't know who I contribute this a quote to, but it's something that I kind of like keep in the back of my mind, that as feminists, we were taught that we could be anything, but we grew up thinking that we have to be everything. So it's a balance of, well, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. The reality is you can't do everything. You can only do so much. If I could create more hours in the day, you bet your ass I would. We would have figured that out years ago. They would have bottled it and made a lot of money. But we don't. And like we talked about before with sleep, like sleep is a thing you have to plan for. So how do I manage the like 12 jobs I have at work with sleep, with just personal hobbies, with everything else, with going to the gym, with meal prep, with everything else that I want to do that's important to me? Previously before wrestling, I was a project manager for 10 years in the software industry. So I have a lot of experience making lists and prioritizing them. And honestly, that is how I start a lot of my day. I get my cup of coffee and I sit down, I literally write it out on a piece of paper, because it sits in my brain a lot better if I physically write it out. And I write out all the things I need to do in a day. And the first realization I make is I am not going to get everything done. So what are the things I absolutely need to get done today? And it's stuff that's like, if something is due for work, if I have a doctor's appointment, if it's something time sensitive, that typically tends to be the thing that goes up the list. But I'll also trick myself into writing down the things that I know I'm going to do that day. So if I have a particular meeting or I'm recording a podcast or something, I'll write that down just so I get the benefit of crossing something off. Because we can't always plan that things are going to go the way we expect them to, even on our days off. Things happen. And sometimes I could have a whole plan for how my days off is going to go, and then something goes out the window and I have no control over that. But if I can acknowledge that the things I did get done, even if they were planned, even if they were scheduled, then I feel like I made progress in my day. And that's just been the thing that really works for me.
You know, for years, when I had goals or things that I wanted to do, I always did it mentally. I never wrote it down. And it taught me how to multitask, but it also caused a lot of stress because I didn't see it. And I did that for years, maybe to like 2-3 years ago. So when I started making wrestling music in 2014, I had a goal of a 10-year period, mm-hmm. and I just kept it that way with some numeric goals that I wanted to put down that I wanted to achieve in the middle, but I had like long-term goals. So last year, I finally crossed everything off the list. The AEW performance was like the last thing.
A Grand Slam?
Yes, a Grand Slam.
That was awesome, man.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Tony. Thank you. Like everybody who showed me love that day. Was one of the biggest nights of my life. Thank you, and I love all you guys. So I had to write down a whole nother set of lists for the next 10 years. So I'm like, okay, let me write this down. Because throughout these 10 years, I'm just going through the list and looking at it, but not when, like you said, life. So adjustments happen in between this list. Life mm-hmm. stuff happens. You got to change certain things to kind of get to the goal. Your goal is never like this on the road. You got to take detours, go off the interstate, go back. Any goal, you have to go back. As long as you get back on the road, there's going to be, changes. So I actually wrote down my next 10 years of what I want to do from 35 to 45. I'm 35 now, to 45 in my for not only in wrestling but outside of wrestling. So writing down these goals, it really helps you really seeing what you want to do. And I want to ask you this. So looking now, maybe not 10 years from now, because I don't know how you write your goals down or what your timetable is, but what are some personal goals you have for yourself within these next few years outside of what you do for a living, but just for yourself personally? What are some things for Aubrey that you want to do for yourself that you haven't done?
So this is an interesting question because I'm an extremely goal-oriented person. And I very much believe in goals being measurable and being achievable. If you have something that is large and nebulous and vague, it's really hard to track the progress towards that because sometimes goals take a long time to hit. And you need to have that feeling of the things I'm doing are getting me closer to that goal. And I personally, the thing that has worked for me, it may not work for everybody, is figuring out how can I measure that this is a thing that I did. So like when I started out, I was on the indies and I would set goals like I want to ref in 5 different states this year. I want to do the main event at a promotion that's not my home promotion. Like little things that maybe I don't have direct control in, but that my involvement can get me those opportunities potentially. And I ended up hitting all of those. The problem I'm facing now is that I am at the top of my level, that there are a handful of full-time referees on television. So what do goals look like now?
I'm in the same boat musically.
Right? So it's like, cool, be in the biggest wrestling show in history. Did that. Like, what's next? Like, how do I measure that? How do I set something and say that I can be, oh, this is something I can absolutely achieve? I have no freaking idea. So what I started to think about was how does this work, given who I used to be, given my position, what I am now? And I've always kind of said that I wanted to leave wrestling better than I found it. And what the hell does that mean? I don't know. But I know that when I was brought in, people were extremely nice to me and gave me all these awesome opportunities. So how do I make it more inviting and present more opportunities for other people who come in after me? And I'm just trying to figure out ways that I can do this. And we have 7 full-time referees at AEW. AEW is a massive operation. There's hundreds of people from production to talent to executives. There's a ton of people. So what can I as one person do? So like something we did recently, there's this software development technique called postmortems, where you sit as a team when you finish a project and you talk about things that went right, things that went wrong, and things that you can do to improve. And it's really great if you have time-boxed measurements of time saying like, okay, we started this project, we prototyped it, and now we're here. Cool, let's review it, take all of that stuff, do a project again as a group, and then review that postmortem we had before. So I did that with the ref team. I sat down and said, hey guys, trust me on this, this is something I really want to do. And we sat down, we talked about it, it was the last pay-per-view at Full Gear. We sat down, we talked, and we said, okay, what's something that went right? What's something that went wrong? What's something we can do to improve? And what you get out of it is not just action items that you address, but you end up building an awesome team. Like the referee corps at AEW is already awesome. Some of the best dudes I've ever met in my life. But it gives you an opportunity where it is a safe space to promote your brothers and say, this guy totally killed it in this one match where this thing went wrong and then they didn't lose their cool and it was awesome. And it allows you to put someone up on the pedestal that they deserve and say, this person's awesome in front of everyone else. It gives you that platform where it's okay to praise other people. So we've got another pay-per-view coming up. So I was talking to Paul Turner last night and said, hey, can we do this again? He's like, absolutely, let's do it again. Now we have the opportunity to go back and review the things we said we were going to do. And see the things that we said, hey, let's try to make this better. Did we actually do that stuff? Let's try and figure it out. So I'm trying to figure out ways that I can basically take the things that make me work and work for me, and how do I expand that to a broader level?
You know, it's funny because we can have this conversation and it didn't really hit me until the AEW performance and understanding where you're at in your position. Where a lot of times when we are on our way up, we look at somebody or something somebody's done as a sense of motivation to get there.
Correct.
Oh, this person does this. Okay, my goal was to be like in hip-hop terms, like the Tupac or the Jay-Z of wrestling music. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be the top guy, and I wanted to, once I got established and to be or one of the top people, whatever, that's all subjective, but just in my position, then I can hand out opportunities, find a way to work my way around it on the hip-hop side to help others once I got to that position. Then you get to that position, and then you're like, well, damn. You're like, okay, what is going to...
What's next?
What's going to keep my fire burnt? Not my fire, but a blue tip fire. Not just the fire where it's just like,
the
hottest
of hot.
The hottest of hot.
You don't want embers.
Right. You don't want the little little logs and, you keep it when you're camping and keep the little fire. No, you want that blue tip fire with motivation. But with human nature and the way human beings are, it goes in ebb and flows, So then I remember I was watching the Michael Jordan documentary, right? During COVID. And I always think about this. When Michael Jordan would go out to play, he would make stuff up in his head where somebody on the other team said something. Or, you said I wasn't going to score 30 tonight, and nobody said this. But in his head it did, because it kept him going.
And I took offense to that.
Exactly, and I took offense to that, and that was offensive. And you realize that once you won two or three championships, you guys won a championship with Wembley Stadium. You guys won a championship. That's a ring. That's a championship ring. That's the first, and nobody's ever done as big as you guys. So it's like, okay, now I'm here. I did it. Now what is going to keep my fire going? Then you realize that once you get to this level, it's really the hardest thing, because everybody from the outside, they see you shooting. They see you there, shooting for those stars, being there. But the hardest thing to do is to maintain this.
So kind of off of that Jordan thing, one of the best books I read this year was Boss Up by Rick Ross. Big Rick Ross
fan. Absolutely.
And there was a quote from the book that I thought was really important, especially when we see people achieving cool things, where he says, the only reason that people know that Jordan had the flu or that Tiger's leg was messed up is because they won anyway. Megan Rapinoe did the same thing in soccer. Like, she would talk her mouth and everyone just said, look, maybe you can win and then we'll listen. So she went out and won. And then she started trying to argue, no, pay the women equal. People only listen to you when you win. So it's not only are you hitting those goals, but now people are seeing you hit those goals. Now what are you going to do? Because now you're on a platform. So I think from that, your goals have to change, especially if you have a platform that's very visible and very entertainment driven. I think that's why we see a lot of athletes kind of step out and start having these messages that they're delivering, because nobody cares unless you win.
And, it's the type of work that we do is a momentum-based game.
100%.
And the worst thing you can do is kind of leave. I wish that I could be an Andre 3000 and just drop music when I want, have the whole world on my fingers, and then to disappear for 6 months and still have the same impact I'm not doing it. Everybody doesn't have that luxury. The way the world is now with content and the way that we're moving, you have to be in people's faces.
All the time.
You have to, once you score 20 that game, you have to do it the next day. You officiate a great main event. Next Wednesday, you have to do it again. Mm-hmm. And it's having that understanding that this is what comes with the territory of motivation and being goal-oriented, is that you constantly have to, it's literally like this. And I swear, Gary Payton said this about Kobe Bryant, rest in peace, Kobe. He said that, okay, Kobe came to me and asked me defensively, how do I do these moves? Mm-hmm. I'm the glove, I'm the lockdown point guard, so I teach him. Then I have to figure out a way to stop him.
Correct.
Because I taught him everything. Mm-hmm. Now I have to challenge myself to figure out a way how to stop this young guy once I told him everything.
That's an interesting note on teaching as well, because when you're trying to explain your craft to somebody else, it provides a method to the madness. It's do you actually know what you're doing if you can't explain it to another individual?
Wow. What a jewel.
So we have a newer referee at AEW. His name's Brandon Martinez. He's only been reffing for maybe 2 years tops. He was a student of Pat Buck at Creative Pro. So he came in. We needed someone who was extremely fluent in Spanish because we have a lot of luchadores coming in. I've been trying to learn Spanish, but yo hablo español un poco.
Absolutely.
It's very minimal at this point. So Brandon comes in, and he's still very new. And I like to think I'm still very new to wrestling, too. I've only been in the business for about 7 years. I've been watching only since, like, 2011. But, like, he's very new. So now, all of a sudden, he's asking me a lot of questions. And there's a lot of things I don't think about. I just do them because this is just
instinct business.
It's instinct now. It's just how my body moves.
Yes.
So when he asks a question and says, well, why is it that you do that? I need to have an answer. Because if the answer is, I don't know, it just felt right. Why does it feel right? What's the method to the madness? And it makes you kind of question all of the things you're doing. And it kind of puts you back on your game. Because now it's like, okay, now I got this young gun coming up, trying to get to everyone else's level. I have to step up my game. Because now not only am I teaching someone, now I'm leading someone.
And that's the thing about leadership, too. It was like the same thing, the same parallel of when I first got Swerve in the studio and taught him how to rap was, okay, how can I help him and give him the formula without have him trying to be me?
Exactly. You need to be the individual.
Right.
But still understand the basics.
Yep.
You're essentially giving someone Play-Doh and saying, here's how you play with it, but go make your own thing.
Yes. And I think that ends up, that's the thing about mentoring and leadership is understanding, okay, how can I give you, how can I nudge? It's like one thing, it's like with me having my kids, especially my son, my oldest son is 12 now. So this is the correlation of what we're saying is now you're getting at the age where, especially when you become a teenager, where I can't directly tell you what to do with your experiences because it's a whole new world, but I can nudge you in the right direction. And it's the same thing with mentorship and leadership. It's like, okay, when you get in the studio and you do this song, like I do many artists, okay, how do you feel? How do you want to do it? Instead of me trying to make them sound like Teezy, because you shouldn't. You're your own individual person. So I'm pretty sure with the referee, it's like, okay, you don't need to be Aubrey. Be yourself. Make your own instinct, but I can teach you the basics in ways that'll help you to where you could develop your own style and make it your own way. But you being at the top of your game in what you're doing, you know, you being a legend with what you're doing now, how do you stay motivated even with the downtimes? Because there's going to be downtimes that comes with this. You know, there's going to be downtimes that you experience. How do you stay motivated even when times are tough, either personally, mentally? What do you do to keep focused during this time?
I think the thing that's been really helpful for me is understanding the reason behind why I do what I do. And the first time that really clicked was the first time I saw little kids dress up like me at shows.
Mm.
And seeing people like dress up like referees for Halloween. Like, it's a really cool thing that it's kind of one of those things you can just say like, oh yeah, whatever. There's like a little girl in the crowd, but like, 6 years ago, there was not a female referee on television. And now there's four. You've got two at WWE, you got one at Impact, and you got me. So we are changing the game. And it's understanding that I maybe don't have the best day. I maybe mess up something in a match, and it's like only I know about it, like other people don't know about it or whatever, and I may be beating myself up over it. But then I see somebody like made a sign in the crowd. It's like, it does not matter. They don't know the imperfections that I see. They just see the impact that I'm having. It's why we get attached to characters. We see what their message is. We see how they represent ourselves on television. That's what draws us to media, is we love seeing people that look like us doing cool things. So it's things like that. Like, that's the thing that keeps me going, is knowing that women in authority roles in wrestling, like officiating, is such a new thing. That we are literally changing the game. Like, we are the ones who are making our knuckles bloody from punching holes in the ceiling. So there are girls who are growing up with me on TV as their default, that they don't even think about the fact that this is a new thing. This is just what they know. So who knows? Like, Ruth Bader Ginsburg said one time, we'll have full equality when the Supreme Court is all women. One day we may have a ref team that is all women, and no one would think that would be weird. And that is the thing that I'm currently doing and how we are reaching that.
And see, that goes to leaving a legacy in what you're doing. And, you know, heavy is head that wears the crown, and somebody has to do it, you know. And a lot of times, this is what I fought, and I'm going to be 100% transparent with you here. I fought being a pioneer in something because it's like being Wilt Chamberlain or Julius Irvin, you know what I mean, in your lane. Like, you were great for, you were a legend. You were the GOAT or whatever in your period of time, and then you come to the point where years pass on, other people start doing things, and then you become like a pioneer. You become the focus of what people are looking at. And remember, as we said earlier, you're looking at people, and then you become the target in a good way of what people are aiming to be. So now you have a goal in what you want to do. And that is a great goal, you know, all female referee team and everything that you're planning to do. Has it ever crossed your mind? And how do you feel about being a pioneer? Like, you are in a very unique situation. How do you feel about being like the go-to person, like a pioneer in what you're doing? Has it dawned on you yet?
So I'm going to shout out to one of my sisters over at WWE, Aja Daphne, however she goes by on TV, but she's a referee on Monday Night Raw. The first time we ever met up for dinner, she once said to me, "It's going to be weird to think that one day when they make a documentary about referees, they have to talk about us." And that was the moment it clicked for me of going, oh my God. Like, I knew this was big, but we are very good at living in the moment. We don't necessarily see the big picture or what it looks like in the long term. We can have plans for like what we want to see, but ultimately we're not the ones who are always responsible. It's kind of what I was talking about before with goals. Like, you're only able to affect so much. There's so many things like outside influences and various opportunities coming to light. There's only so much you can control. But knowing that what you're doing today is going to be talked about for years is trippy, man. Like, but that's also something that, like, I try not to think about a lot. I just try to also live in the moment and enjoy what I'm doing, because that's the thing I want to be remembered for. That I got into this business to have fun, and I still have fun to this day. And it is the coolest job in the world. I yell at half-naked men who play fight for a living. Like, someone flies me around the country, puts me in nice hotels, and this is how I pay my bills. Like, absolutely. This is cool as shit. Like,
absolutely.
So I try to not think about all of the, like, oh my God, this thing that I'm doing today is going to have this major impact. It's like, not everything I do is going to matter. But it's the consistency that matters. It's the showing up every day. It's when you're not feeling your best, it's still putting in the effort. It's doing the cool things, but also reaching a hand out to help someone up and help them do cool things. That's the things that matter. Like, I don't necessarily know what fans think about me, but I want my coworkers to know that I helped. I want my coworkers to feel like I made their jobs easier and I helped tell their stories. That's the thing that, like, day to day that I think about, that this match was great and I think I made it better for reasons X, Y, Z. That's the thing that keeps me going on a day-to-day, more so than thinking about kind of the long-term impact in a historical aspect.
Absolutely, and that's how you stay focused. Mm-hmm. That's how you stay focused. That's not how you think about, okay, you understand you're setting a legacy, but you're not dwelling on it. You're staying focused on what the task is in hand. And shout out to Aja, shout out to you guys for not only being pioneers in what you're doing, but setting the standard and being good Samaritans of people that people could actually look up to. You know, I could just imagine the feeling of, you know, that feeling is the same way people say, oh man, you know, I have little kids come to me and they're showing me the little wrestling songs they're working on. And that's great. That's a great feeling, you know, and it's a great feeling to be that person to help people. But let me pivot to something else.
Sure.
17 years. I need to get the book on how to make it work for my next situation.
For me and Steve.
If she's out there, I'm going to be a better person from my past. Wasn't perfect, but I'm going to be on game next time. 17 years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which dates myself because it makes you think, like, how old is this girl?
Like, I got in my first relationship. Mm-hmm. I was a sophomore in high school.
Okay.
So I was 15. I graduated high school at 17. Yeah, I was 15 when I first met her. The mother of, I have a tribe of kids, but two of my kids. I have four, two of my kids. So, you were, wow, 17 years. Okay, let's break this down. How do you make it work? 17 years with the same person.
It's wild, right?
And I'm sure you go through ups and you go through downs. But that love and that communication keeps you together. You know, how do you make it work 17 years in and still going strong?
So, you know, the funny thing about all this is I met my husband at my freshman orientation in college. He was a junior. I was a freshman. A very small technical school called DigiPen Institute of Technology in Redmond, Washington. Basically, go there, you get an undergrad in computer science to make video games. It's extremely specialized. I was telling someone at the party last night, like, the guy that taught me how to do computer graphics made the water in Rave Race 64. Like, that is how specialized this shit is. I move away from California. I move up to the Seattle area, and I tell myself, I'm single. I'm not going to date anybody. People are just going to get distracting. I'm just going to focus on school. Literally the second day of my freshman orientation, my husband comes through an elevator, busts through a group of people, and invites me to a party.
Well, that premonition, that lasted 2 days.
2 whole days. Made it great. And it's not like in that moment that I'm like, this is the guy that I'm going to be with forever. Like, I'm 18 years old at that point. I'm just having fun. I just love the idea that someone like thinks I'm cool enough to want to spend time with me when we're not, you know, drowning in homework and stuff. And I think it just eventually worked out. Like, you have to be the kind, for this school, like, there was 200 kids in my freshman class, 100 people graduated. There is a large attrition rate. It is a very difficult program. So you have to be someone that is dedicated and knows how to work. So wow. Automatically the people coming to this program, like, I don't know if you went to like a undergrad or a master's or any of that, but
associates, yeah.
Right. So a normal bachelor's degree is somewhere around 115, 120 credits. Mine was 154.
Woo!
Over 4 years. So again, extremely specialized. Like, some people take underwater basket weaving when they go to a college and that's their elective. Mines are like string theory, statistics, advanced computer graphics techniques, like really like nerdy stuff. So there's, you have to be dedicated. You have to be, I don't want to say you have to be a workaholic, but you have to know what hard work means. And when you're facing something that literally it's an advanced technical concept that you don't know, you don't know how much time you're going to have to put in to understand this, but you have to figure it out. You end up building these bonds and this camaraderie with people that is so deep. And like, all of my friends from college are still my friends today because we all went through something that is extremely unique. And I think that's the thing that really hit it off with me and my husband is that we just immediately are both of those people. We go to this school and we both independently want to make video games. So that is the thing we're going to do. There is no question. We are there to do this thing. So it's always been that. Fast forward to 2019, I get an offer for All Elite Wrestling. The conversation did not go, hey, Steve, can I do this? It's a, hey, Steve, I'm going to do this. And his response was, cool, just tell me how much money you make now so I can update the budget. It wasn't a matter of, let's figure this out if we can do it. There was no question that I was going to do it. It's just a, how do we make it work now? This is the new reality. And I honestly, like, you say you need the book. Like, I don't know what the book is. I think it's just our mindsets are very much the same. And rather than trying to figure out how to make it work together, it's a lot of, okay, you're going to do this thing? Cool. I got you. How do we make it work? It's not him deciding what I'm going to do with my career. It's me deciding, but him understanding that this is the thing I want. This is the thing that makes me happy. Cool. He's along for the ride.
I think that dynamics of, I think in 2024, 25 in the future, and I think a few years ago it started this. Tell me if you agree with this in terms of relationships, because I've been in two long-term relationships with both women at the time, 15 years, that I was with both of them respectively for the time we add the time together. Times have changed in where now the social dynamics of relationships with the other person has changed to where, you know, back in the day, you look at the times the way it was, the man worked, the woman stayed at home, she took care of the kids. Now it's a more of a time now where you choose to be together than having to be together.
Right.
Where the woman is well accomplished as the man. Money can be equal. She can make more than him. He can make more than her, whatever. But the social dynamics of what keeps you guys together, now I truly believe communication really matters even more now, because back in the day, the dude worked at General Motors. She was home with the two kids. He came home. He worked 9 to 5. Then that was just their life.
Yep.
Now you have your own business. You have your own career, your own things. You're on the road. You're doing this, your thing. He's doing his thing. So tell me a little bit about the communication dynamic that it takes that you think works now in relationships as opposed to back then. Do you think it's harder now or you think it's easier now? What do you think?
I think it's easier so long as you're willing to have the conversation.
Mm.
So I've always, if you know me at all or have listened to any of this, you know I'm a feminist. So I'm very much a women can be anything they want.
Absolutely.
But that takes work. You can't just expect that to come in, right? So as a result, my relationship with my husband is very 50-50. He sees it very similarly. Why should he be the one that has to work and I be the one to stay home? It's a very old school mindset. Sometimes that works for people. We also benefit from not having kids. Like, I will say that for people that have kids, great, that works for you. But this is part of the thing that makes us work and why we're able to accomplish all the things that we do is that we don't have kids to tie us down. So there's already that aspect. So now knowing that I'm gone 200 days a year and that he's still at home working in video games 9 to 5 remotely, he's going to end up taking care of the pets more because he's at home. He's going to end up doing more of the like car maintenance when it's got to go to the shop or whatever. When I come home, I do all of the laundry, traditionally a feminine thing, but I'm making a bunch of dirty clothes on the road. And if I'm going to do laundry anyway, I can just do his laundry. It's fine. He manages all of the money. He manages the budgets, traditionally a masculine thing, but it works for us because I'm constantly moving from here and there and blah, 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 that I have a hard time thinking about the grand scheme of what our financial picture looks like. So we've just sort of picked and chosen what has worked for us. And sometimes it's this little thing, like going back to the communication thing of, I try to not be the tornado when I'm home and just make a mess. I try to keep things clean because when I leave, my husband has to live in that mess that I've created.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to stress him out. So what we've started doing is that like Monday night before I get on a plane, I make sure the kitchen's clean. I make sure the dishwasher's running. I get all of the laundry in the hamper. Like all of the surfaces at least are clean so that we both wake up and we don't have to worry about that shit. But there will be times where like his life gets really hard. And I'll come home from the airport, and the first thing he does is apologize and say, I'm really sorry, the house is a mess right now because something happened. But it's the realization that, same thing it goes back to, we are not always in control of everything. If something happens at work, if he's got a crazy deadline and suddenly he had to focus on stuff and he didn't have time to like empty the dishwasher and the dishes started to pile up in the sink, that's fine. It's understanding and recognizing that things happen, but not being upset because someone couldn't keep up their end of the bargain. It's a partnership. It's cool. You've been really busy at work. Great. I was planning on coming home and playing video games, but now I know I'll have to clean up the kitchen. But I know that that's going to give him satisfaction because it's one less thing for him to worry about. And then I get the satisfaction of helping my husband's life be a little bit easier that day.
You know, you make a great point because, you know, I have 3 boys and 1 girl, right? And my girl's my middle child. And me and her are like to the hip. You know, that's my baby. I adore her. I love my knucklehead boys too. But just when you have that 1 girl, it's different, right? And that's the way that I raise her. And even though she's 8, I always tell you can be what you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to take over the world. Be the first female president. Like I empower her. Just because I thoroughly believe in her and I want her to, you know, when you go out and you play with your brother and you play soccer, compete, you know what I mean? Go, you know, don't not do it because you're a girl. No, go hard, compete, you know? And I tell my brother, I say, hey, you guys, you know, when you guys play, don't, you know what I mean? Let her learn the value of hard work and she's going to push hard. You know what I mean? And that's the thing that I teach, which I'm glad you said that about, you know, not only empowerment, not only feminist, but women empowerment and being what you want to be in this world, especially nowadays, which is extremely important in having that confidence. But how do you guys work the dynamic of things that you don't agree on? Because you're human beings. So you can love somebody to death, but you might not agree on everything as human beings. How do you guys work through the disagreements with each other?
Oh, well, that's the problem, is that we kind of agree on everything.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Your communication is very good then. If it might get to that point, you guys know how to stop before it gets there. If it ever did go there, you probably would communicate before it,
so,
you know.
So it's never anything big that we disagree on.
Right.
It's always little things. It's like something as simple as social media. Like, hey, I want to tweet this thing. What does this sound like? And he's like, I would change it to be this. And I'm like, well, that's dumb. And then I think about it and go, yeah, he's right. Okay, that sounds slightly funnier, or maybe it's worded differently and it kind of comes across differently, whatever. It's always those little things. It's not immediately accepting that, like, well, because I wrote it, it's better. It's, why did I ask for his opinion in the first place? It's because I value it. So it's one of the things that I know he's really good at stuff like that. So I'll typically pick his brain, like, hey, what do you think about this? I have a coworker at AEW, Amanda Huber. She's one of my best friends in the world. She is really great at immediately being the yin to my yang. And when I'm thinking about something, she's like, you didn't think about XYZ. I'm like, oh my God, thank you, thank you, thank you. I just need someone to think from the opposite perspective.
You need that peripheral friend or peripheral in your relationship, because you're not able to see everything.
It's the person that is looking out for you and wants the best for you, but sees it differently than how you see it.
Right, right. Is this another perspective? It's another piece to the blackjack game, and it's another, okay, you know, how do I counter this? And you think about it, the top strategists or people in the world, bosses, they have people with them. That's why they have a council.
It's all teams.
It's all teams, and it's all a council. And that's why I think that's a great thing that you have in your dynamic, which is the reason why it lasts as long as it lasts, because you guys can kind of finish each other's sentences. But here's the one thing that people don't bring up about relationships. People say, oh, communication is this. But the one thing that I noticed from anybody who's married, which I learned from, and that's why I ask these questions, so one day when I'm in my situations, I will know how to handle it. And now my communication skills are a lot better and I'm more mature. It's self-awareness. And I think that's the one
absolutely
key thing that people don't bring up when they talk about these things with relationships. Oh, you got to communicate. You got to love each other. You got to do this. Okay, you got to date. And that's great. And I'm not saying that's wrong. And those are added things. Communication is very important, but you have to be self-aware within yourself. And not only knowing that, but self-aware and knowing how to deal with people.
Yep.
Because we're all flawed in our own ways, and we all have our strengths and we all have our weaknesses, you know? And the thing, like my thing was, I was always extremely too nice to people. Mm-hmm. Not in a bad way, but in the sense of like, okay, like, I need to, why am I overextending myself in this situation? I don't need to do that. I did enough. Like, why am I going all above and beyond for everybody? I don't have to do that. And that's not saying it's a bad thing, but like, hey, I did that. Okay, cool. God bless you. I did that. You know, but sometimes you could overextend, but that's self-aware. That's being self-aware, saying, okay, Antoine, you did enough. Like, you're really going overboard than what you need to do. I understand you want to help people, but dude, you're doing the most, you know, and not sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, I just want to say this last point is with the relationships is being self, is it's keeping that self-awareness and saying, okay, you know what, I'm going to ask for this counsel from my partner or from Amanda or other people, but also understanding that, hey, you know, I might not always be right in this situation. You know, this is, their perspective might work better. You know, and I think that's the key, a part of key to your relationship lasting as long as it has, is just being self-aware with each other.
I think people have a hard time admitting that it's okay to be wrong. Whether it's a relationship, whether it's at work, regardless of the setting, I think people just don't want to be wrong, because that immediately is a feeling of failure. And it's not. It's a feeling of growth. That, cool, you were wrong. How do you not be wrong next time? What's the thing you took out of this? It goes back to the postmortem thing, right? Like, cool, okay, you were wrong. Well, this was right, and why? Great, awesome. We've all grown better from this. I think the self-awareness thing is so important now that you bring it up. It's understanding how you communicate to other people. Like, I know that as a woman who has been in multiple male-dominated industries, I'm a very direct person. That when I have a problem, I'll come to you and I'll bring it up to you.
Absolutely.
And I'm very direct. The problem is a lot of people will see that as like, oh, she's being a bitch or she's really aggressive or whatever, just because of the way that society tells us how we should view women. But I know this to be a thing. So I'll oftentimes start a conversation with, hey, I tend to be very direct with people. So please do not take this as me being mad at you. And sometimes it's as simple as framing the conversation in a way. It's sometimes you need to vent to a partner, but your partner's role is to help you and fix things. And sometimes you just don't need anything fixed. Sometimes you just want to complain about stuff.
Hey,
so a lot of times when you're starting those conversations, to prevent them from turning into fights, is starting with like, hey, I had a really bad day, or this situation sucks, and I just want to complain about it, and I need you to listen and not fix it. And starting that immediately changes the dynamic of where that conversation goes. Rather than someone trying to butt in and say, well, did you think about this? Blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't want to think about that right now. I just want to think about this feeling that I'm feeling that is valid. I want to wallow in it. I want you to help me through it so I can move on with my life.
You know, it's funny. Every person that I've talked to that are in long-lasting relationships said that one key thing I'm not only saying this as men, but just as people in general, we're almost hardwired to just, when we see something broken, we just want to fix it.
We care about people and we want to fix them when they're hurting.
Right, but sometimes
we don't need fixing.
We don't need that. We just need to get this off our chest. Now, I don't need you to answer this and step in and fix this right now. Just let me get this off my chest.
Yep.
Give me 5 minutes to vent. Workplace, life, whatever, and then we can move on. And then if I ask for your counsel, then, you know, I will take it in stride. But if I'm just getting this off my chest, just give me 5 minutes to just get this off my chest. You just open your ear, you know, be supportive, and then we can move forward. That's two key things that I've noticed. And this is kind of therapy for me. Thank you. This is Tea Table helping me.
Awesome.
Is,
hey, we could just write the book. Just print this out.
Absolutely.
Put it on paper, transcribe it. There we go. We got the book.
Absolutely. Self-awareness and learning the communication that you don't have to.
Framing communication.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you don't have to fix every single issue. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's just good to get it off your chest. And that dynamic is great, because I know that, you know, you guys were essentially kids when you got together.
Yeah.
You know, and to still have that kind of connection now, there has to be not only a deep connection with you guys as people, but there has to be a understanding. And I think that's what people lack in certain ways, is understanding each other.
I think there's also the understanding that people grow and change with time.
You're not going to be the same person.
No, I'm really glad I'm not the same person I was when I was 18.
Me either.
Because I was an idiot and I was annoying. And
me too.
I don't know how he found that attractive in any way whatsoever. But like, I'm very comfortable with who I am now at 36. So it's knowing that the person you are at the start of your relationship is not going to be the person you are 10, 20, 30, 50, 100 years from now. You are going to grow and change with one another, and you have to be okay with that. That I think when people get into relationships, they assume the person they're meeting that day is the same person. Like, no, there's a part of us that is malleable and changed by our experiences, not just the people in our lives, but the things that we live through. And we live through things together as partners. And how we come out of those events is going to be different. That when you have something that's difficult that happens in your life, how I view it is different than how you view it, but we both grew and changed from it. And we have to be okay with that fact. Like, I think there's ever an expectation that the person you meet in the beginning of a relationship, if they're going to be the same person, I think that's wrong. I think that's a wrong assumption to make for you. And it's cheating you out of the beauty of being human and the beauty of growth. And that's one of the greatest parts about life, is living it.
Absolutely. And I think that you did yourself a disservice if you're 18 and then you're the same person when you're 40 or 50, you know. It's
dumb.
It's like, you know, it's funny. Shout out to Fonte from the Rap Group Little Brother. I saw an interview he did recently when he said, when you're in your teens, in your 20s, you want to take over the world. You're like, rah,
oh,
rah.
Dude, the person I was when I was 20 is so different than the person I am today.
You know, and then when you hit your 30s, you're like, you're kind of like rah, but you're more strategic about your
right.
your moments, about your rah moments. And then when you get to our age where we're getting, we're like, what? Okay. You know what I mean? It's like, whatever.
So it's even weirder because, like, I had a completely different career for my 20s. I was working in video games full time. I shipped 6 different digital titles across multiple platforms. Like, I did something completely different that shaped who I am as a human being. And then when I turned 30, I started this whole, like, ref thing. And now I do something completely different. Like, I still dabble in the video game stuff, but it's like, who I am as a person has changed entirely. How I identify. Like, I go by a different name with most people than what my government name is.
Right.
Same. If you had told me that was going to happen 10 years ago, I would have said, there's no way. Not a possible way. So it's not only understanding that you're going to change, but it's being open to the potential of change. That if you had told me that maybe just don't go to undergrad and get your computer science degree because you're going to end up doing something entirely different anyway. No, I still would have done it because going through that school, meeting the people I did and having the jobs I did got me to this point. It shaped who I am as a human being, which prepared me for literally everything else. I would not be the person I am today without my husband. I would not be the person I am today without my prior career. I would not be the person I am today without you.
Amen. And thank you for that.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I will say to add to that point is being in this and being in the entertainment business and being in this line of work, when you find good people in this world,
dude,
you really got to hold on to them. Whether it's your relationships, whether it's family, friends, coworkers that you could trust. Good people in your life really, really matter, you know. And when I started in my line of work, well, I've been making music since 2006. But when I got around the wrestling game in 2014, I couldn't have imagined everything that has happened and meeting the great people as in yourself, Swerve, and other people that I've met. Because all you hear is the horror stories.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you hear. And I'm not saying there aren't horror stories in this television, stuff you read, you see, YouTube, all you hear is the horror stories. But there's good people that you meet in this line of work in life that I wouldn't have dreamed of meeting. You know what I mean? In the sense of what I've been able to accomplish, what you've been able to accomplish. Who are the shout out to some of the people? Excuse me. Give a shout out to some of the people, not only in your line of work, but in life, that has really helped you shape the person that who you are today. Who are some of the people, even some of your coworkers, some of your great friends, who are some of the people that has really helped shape you as Aubrey Edwards, who you are as a person?
So on that note, just before I answer your question,
sure.
I think we hear about the horror stories because as humans, we love gossip.
Yes, we attract to the negativity. It's more the story.
It's always more fun to talk about the things that didn't go right than to talk about the things that went right.
Absolutely.
And I think that's why we hear those stories a lot. So I really like that we're doing this. We're praising people. I don't think he gets enough credit for being as great as he is, but our senior official, Paul Turner, is just an excellent human being. He is not only just like sunshine to be around, he's an excellent referee. He's just by the book, he still gets a little bit of his personality out. He's great. But his job as senior official is to assign referees to matches. And he is very good about making sure we all get to do something cool. He could very easily, in his position, take this title match, take the main event, do this, blah, blah, blah. Like, whatever. He could be very, very choosy. Because we've all sort of experienced working with those people that are just me, and not you.
Yeah, not delegators.
Paul is definitely the guy that builds up the whole team. That it's like, okay, you had a light night on TV, you're going to get something cool next time. Like, Forbidden Door, I only had one match at the pay-per-view. He made sure I got real cool stuff at Wembley. Made sure that I got the exact stuff I wanted at Wembley because he knew it was important to me. He's like, yeah, cool, you kind of didn't do this thing, but like, we're going to make sure that like your night is made here. But it happens on a week-to-week basis at TV. Like, you know that he can depend on you for the thing he's putting you in. And he's giving people opportunities as they earn them. As we've got these new guys coming up, they're getting spots and opportunities. Like, cool, this is your first title match in this on this belt. This is your first main event on this television show. And it's recognizing stuff. And then he's like, hey, how cool did that feel? And he just wants you to, like, experience how cool this is. And seeing people talk about him in a positive light brings me joy because he represents our entire ref team. So anytime that he does something great, I feel proud of him. I feel proud of our referees. I feel proud of our company. And I think Paul's just a freaking awesome guy.
So I have to bring this up too, and I always ask this question for every guest that I have. How do you protect your peace?
Learning how to say no.
So
you had mentioned the, like, being really nice and going out of your way for people.
You experience the same thing?
There's a point where that backfires, and I learned that really, I should have learned it earlier, but I've learned it over and over again, where you overcommit yourself.
Yes, Lord.
Because we want to do everything, but we can't do everything because we don't have the time. And it's understanding that you have a cup, and that cup can only be so full. And you have to do things to take the contents out of that cup so you can fit more things in. So there's a lot of times where I'll want to do something and I want to help somebody out, but I have to be straightforward and honest with them and say, look, I could help you out, but I don't really have the time to. And I'm being honest with you as a friend because I don't want to commit to something that I can't give the effort to.
You know, I'm a be honest. It's the first time I said this, but I'm going to be honest with you in the walks of life that I suffered and I just recently started getting over it from winner's guilt.
Mm-hmm.
Where, for anybody who doesn't know what this is, I know a lot of us that are empaths are very, you know, good, well-nurtured and souled people that like to give back and have good hearts and don't do people wrong. You go through winner's guilt where you're chosen. You're the chosen one. You're one of the chosen.
Yep.
And, you know, whether it's you only, the blessing only comes through your eyes and your vision because that's what's meant for you. So when you win, you start feeling not bad, but you start feeling like you got to help everybody because you feel guilty, not guilty that you're in the position, but like you want to help everybody because you're in that position. But
it's like a subset of imposter syndrome.
Yes. Yes. The problem with that, though, because there's always a yin and a yang, a plus and a delta to this. The delta, the minus to this is that you could be interfering with people's lesson and their blessings and their karmic situations if you try to do too much for them. You could be interrupting that by trying to just directly put them in a position. It's like, nah, they got to work for it. They have to figure out their own way. Now, if you can give a helping hand, make a connect or a phone call that can help somebody, you helped, you know, and you don't have to overextend. So I think with the winner's guilt that I experienced was understanding to say, hey, you know, I don't have to feel bad for being in this position because one, this was what I was called for. And two, that this is what my goal and my blessings are in my direction. But if you interfere with everybody and try to do too much with that cup, you're going to empty it for people that needs to have their own journey in their own situations, you know?
So one of the things that I do is trying to give opportunities to other people. Whenever there's a lady ref on the indies who's looking for help, I offer, hey, I'd love to do a tape study with you. So we'll sit on Zoom, we'll watch one of their matches, and I'll just give them feedback and stuff. The thing that I've learned is I have to do that on my time.
Yes.
Because it's okay for me to put out a helping hand, but I can't overexert myself. It's finding that happy medium. And knowing, yeah, I'm willing to do this. I'm only willing to do it at these times. And if you can't make those times, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not going to bend over backwards for something that I am giving my free time to. Yes, it gives me satisfaction seeing someone succeed and seeing someone, like, I know how hard it is to reach out to people and say, hey, can you help me? Like, that is already a hard enough step. But it's an understanding that I have to let them grow, but I also have to let me grow, that even at 36, I'm still growing.
Amen.
And I need to give myself that opportunity to be able to say no within the constructs that I'm setting up for myself.
You know, that is not only a great point, but that is something I believe everybody who's watching this on Teaser's Table really need to understand, because you can really run your cup out trying to do everything for everybody. And
dude, burnout's real.
Really impossible to do. I make sure I have downtime where I'm not doing anything music related. I record in spurts now. I used to be in the studio every single day and I'm winding myself out. Now I go every 2 weeks for 2 days. I have a time schedule. I get everything in and then I live other 2 weeks being Antoine. And I work on other things and I live a bit. I spend time with family and my mental health is so much better because of how I did that. Now, I want to do another pivot.
Cool.
Seattle Supersonics. Hey. I see the hat. Let's get some fun stuff here. I see the hat.
Yep.
You know, first of all, you guys had the best jerseys in NBA history.
Dude.
Absolutely love the green and yellow and white. I love those colors. You had Gary Payton, Detlef Schrempf, Sam Perkins, Hershey Hawkins. I remember the whole lineup from the 90s. Sean Kemp. You guys had a legendary team and still are legendary. Shout out to the glove, Gary Payton. You guys had a legendary team. When is Seattle getting a basketball team? When is this happening?
Oh, man.
When are you guys getting the basketball team back? Because you guys have some of the best fans in the Pacific Northwest. You know, being in Seattle, going to Defy shows, and also me being a closet Seattle Mariners fan because I love everything Ken Griffey Jr. I am extremely excited, and hopefully you guys get a team back. So tell me about your love for the Sonics, about your love for Seattle sports and things of that nature.
So this is funny because I didn't grow up in Seattle. I grew up in Northern California. I grew up in a city called Vacaville, California. It was kind of like outside Sacramento and San Francisco. It's where my dad grew up. And the way my dad and I bonded growing up is we played video games. So we would play NBA Jam, and we'd always play as the Sonics. And I was Detlef Schrempf, and he would be Gary Payton. And that is what we did. So that was my introduction to basketball, was NBA Jam. And I kind of casually watched growing up, but like anytime you say, well, who's your team? That's my team, right? I move up to the Seattle area for college, and this is 2005. Sonics left in 2008. I never got to see a game because I'm a broke-ass college kid who's buried under homework. So I never actually got to see my team play. And it is so incredibly sad, especially because they have the shared history with the Thunder. So anytime someone says, well, the Thunder won the NBA championship, like, no, they didn't.
Yeah.
They did not win shit. Like, it's really frustrating because, and I think we see it a lot with like wrestling as well. Like, there's not live entertainment coming to Seattle is very difficult because it's a long drive out. So whenever there is a big event, we come out in full force and we give it our all. You said like at the Defy shows, like those fans are rabid.
Love the same thing happens. Best crowd I've ever been to.
Seahawks games, everyone is rabid. Like I remember the start of this hockey season, I would watch games on TV and you'd see some teams, like there's empty seats in the arena. You see the opening day of the Seattle Kraken, every seat is full. And mind you, like we just went to the playoffs last season, but like,
excuse me.
This was a big deal, and this is the hottest ticket in town. People love supporting their sports teams. And it's been a struggle, and we could get into the economics and the politics of, like, government-funded sports arenas and all that sort of stuff. But, like, honestly, there's 30 teams in the NBA. 32 is a real nice number. And we've seen Vegas do really well with the NHL. We've seen Seattle do really well with the NHL. We've got these two beautiful arenas ready to go. I think we're just waiting for the television rights deal. And then eventually we need someone with a lot of money to come in, buy the purchasing rights, build a team, because you've got a fan base already there.
Hey, man. Hey, guys. Seattle, Washington, the whole state, please get a basketball team back out there. I'm telling you, I'm coming out. I'm long overdue to come back anyway to Seattle. I will come. I have a goal to go to a Mariners game. It's still on my bucket list of life. I will make that happen.
The garlic fries, man. When you're there, get the garlic fries.
Absolutely. I gotta stop watching my carbs, but I will try that because I'm there. for sure. So, another question.
Yeah.
When you're on your plane or you're in the Uber or you're on the ride, what are you currently listening to? What music are you currently listening to that right now that you're currently listening to?
Right now. So this is gonna sound really weird. I'm not listening to a lot of music right now.
just kind of focused, not really.
I've really gotten into podcasts, and I think it's a matter of how I try to be as efficient with my time as possible. Like, and maybe this just makes me sound boring as hell, but first thing I do when I wake up when I'm on the road is like I travel with a little Sonos speaker. First thing I do is I turn on my local NPR station, shout out to KUOW, and I listen to the news. And it is the thing that grounds me and brings me back home no matter where I'm at. That sometimes they're talking about stuff that's happening at 6 a.m. and it happens to be 9 a.m. where I am. But it's a thing that really reminds me of the thing back home. And it keeps me grounded with the rest of the world. Because I think a lot of times it's easy to have horse blinders on, especially in entertainment, because you're very focused on the things that are happening in the news, in the dirt sheets, on television, cable deals, all this sort of stuff. You're very, very focused that you forget that there are things happening in the world that are bigger than all of this. Like, in the grand scheme of things, wrestling is not important in the history of the world.
Right.
We're not saving lives.
Right.
But there are people who are going through huge hardships right now. And it kind of just keeps everything in perspective. How important is this thing that I'm doing based in the grand scheme of things?
Right.
So I listen to a lot of podcasts, especially when I'm working out. I have a really hard time listening to music because I feel like I need my brain to be working out as much as I need my body to be working out. So I like listening to The Daily from the New York Times. I love listening to Radio Lab. I started listening to this one podcast called Heavyweight, where there's a guy, the host, he basically just reaches out to people who are trying to close a missed connection or they've lost contact with someone. And it's just a really fascinating story. I love listening to stories about people being people, whether that's good or bad, whether that's related to wars, whether that's related to life, like... It's understanding how humans move through the world and having an appreciation for that.
Absolutely. And I think that you're just at that stage where you're probably in your self-mastery stage. What's podcasting, listening, gaining information, that's a form of self-mastery. Mm-hmm. And that's where you're at. You're at that stage. Like me, I go through spurts where I go through, I'll be honest with you, when I wake up in the morning, I drink water, and I don't listen to any hip-hop in the morning. Unless it's positive. But I'll put on Sade. I'll put on old Metallica music. I'll put on something different. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of weird. I'm a left-handed. So I brush my teeth with my opposite hand to trick my brain, to exercise my brain. I brush my teeth with my right hand.
I'm going to start doing that. I'm going to try that out.
And it's a trick where it's called self-love, self-mastery. So what you do, you get up in the morning. You drink water, you look in the mirror, you tell yourself you love yourself 10 times in the morning, mm-hmm. straight in the mirror. Then you do something with your opposite hand, either eat with your opposite hand, brush your teeth, which is a way to trick your brain so that it is learning something new every day. So if you do something with your opposite hand that you don't normally do, it's exercise for your brain, which also helps your cognitive skills, your comprehension skills. It helps everything. So that's why I do. I do that every morning in the sense where I take a deep breath. I tell myself in the mirror, I love myself for self-affirmation every day. And then I brush my teeth with my opposite hand. Or you can eat breakfast with your opposite hand. Something that you do with the hand that you don't normally do that, you know, that helps you. So, you know, that's a great thing that you do that, listening to like podcasts and stuff like that, because it helps you with your self-mastery. Some people, they do music. Some people... when they're exercising, like I noticed that I'm the kind of the same way now where if I'm exercising, if I'm on my bike or if I'm doing something musically, I'm listening to a podcast or something or some kind of information, especially before I'm recording or writing a song. I always do that. In my downtime with my kids, we listen to music, we dance, we do fun stuff. But that's funny how that correlation works together.
I think it kind of comes back to everything else we've talked about. Like we only have so much time in the day. But I love learning. I love the process of learning. I'm only going to learn so much through my lived experiences. So the best thing that I can do is just listen to other people's experiences and gain the benefits from that.
Here's a really, I don't, you know, this is a question I ask everybody that sits on that couch because it's something that is very, very important that for the evolution of self. You know, when... You know, you look at your whole life and your career and everything that you've done, everything that you're doing, you know, when you look back at yourself, if you sat down
next to yourself 20 years from now, and let's say right there next to you is you 20 years from now, what is that conversation that you're having? Or do you say that I did it? Are you proud? Or I could do more? If you had that conversation with yourself 20 years from now, what is that question you would ask?
What are you doing now? Because what I did 10 years ago is completely different than what I do now. So why would I assume what I'm doing in 20 years is different than what I'm doing now?
Absolutely. So you would ask that person, you would ask yourself, what are you doing now?
Yeah.
What is making you happy 20 years from now?
What brings you joy today?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I do here on TZ's Table, when I close the show, what I do is I have the guests look into the camera, and I have them say anything motivational that they want to say. Any message that they want to say when they look into the camera, whether it's speaking to the people out there, the kids. If Aubrey Edwards had anything she wanted to say, anything motivational, anything you want to look into the camera and directly say for anybody going through a rough time, stand on your goals, anything, just any positive message you want to give the people.
Ooh. Positive message. What do I want to say? There's so much. How do I make it succinct?
You have nothing but time.
I know. I would say to enjoy the moment. Because a lot of moments are going to come and go. So enjoy every single one of them. Even the ones that maybe don't feel the best, know that you're getting something out of it. You may not know right now what you're getting out of it, but take it all in, learn from it, and keep enjoying the moments.
Amen. You know, my friend, I have to tell you that I'm grateful for you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm appreciative of you. You've, like I said earlier when I did the introductions, not only have you been a great person to me in the line of work that we do, but you've also been one of my greatest friends in this. And seeing your inspiration to me, you're an inspiration to my daughter, as somebody that I want to be able to say, hey, this is a person that, you know, followed her dreams and did it her way and, you know, didn't let nothing stop her to get to her goals, and that your life pivoted. It wasn't just this direct thing. You found two different loves and passions, which is very, very rare in life for people to succeed in both, you know, and you know, not only am I grateful for your time, I'm grateful for your energy, your love, your spirit, and thank you so much. If you could tell the people where to follow you, anything social media you want to plug, to tell them where they can keep up with what Aubrey Edwards is doing.
First off, thank you. It was really nice, and I loved being here today. You could follow me on Twitter and Instagram, at Ref Aubrey. That's pretty much where I'm at. I host a podcast. It's available every Thursday, AEW Unrestricted. So check that out. You can watch AEW Dynamite on Wednesdays, Rampage on Fridays, and Collision on Saturdays. And you can watch me yell at half-naked people.
But at TZ Jones on all platforms, follow me, hit me up, MontezTV@gmail.com for all bookings. I love you all. Take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Much love, guys. It's TZ's Table. Peace. We'll be right back.